tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.
You are listening to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, coming to you live every other week on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time from the luxurious 505 Broadway Studio. Hello, I'm Dan Whedon, along with my special co-host today, Mike Pickles, who is pinch hitting for Brad Berger today. We'll talk to Mike here in just a second. You can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. That way you never miss an episode. If you are subscribed, please rate our podcast on iTunes. Your feedback will help us grow and to improve. Our guest today is a very good friend of mine. Special guest is John Martinka with Martinka Consulting. Welcome, John. We'll be chatting with you in just a second here. But first of all, the pinch hitter coming up to hit a home run. I'm positive of it. Mike Pickles. Welcome, Mike.
And the crowd goes wild.
And the crowd is, they're doing the wave. They're doing the wave for you right now. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great.
I think this is our maiden voyage. I've obviously with Brad and with JB, but this is our first time together.
First time for myself in this chair.
Yeah, you were a guest when I was not here.
I was a guest recently, and from what I understand, the feedback was so phenomenal that the demand from our vast audience was that we need to have him
the
back.
The 7.5 said, yes, we want Mike back.
We absolutely need to hear more of him.
Well, you know, Mike, Brad and I usually have a little repartee in the beginning, and he doesn't usually know what's coming. You don't know what's coming. But I've been doing some thinking, which is a dangerous thing, right? And I get to play with my eight-month-old granddaughter quite a bit, and I've realized that there's been something missing in my life for many, many years. And you know what that is?
What could that be?
Playing on the floor. There's something really stress-free and fulfilling about just getting down on the floor, getting some blocks, getting some and just playing on the floor. There's something very, very freeing about that. It's probably been a while since you've done that with your own kids.
It is, been too long. I would agree. That is an experience I've think about fondly, actually, now that you bring that up.
Yeah, there's some fun. And, you know, I was thinking about just from a business aspect, a lot of business owners will start their business and they're doing it out of a skill that they have, whether it's a product or a service, and they grow and they bring on employees and they become management in some sort and leading. And I think sometimes it's important for them just to kind of get back to the basics and get on the floor and play a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something, and we'll maybe talk to John a little bit about this, but something very fulfilling and rewarding about kind of getting back to what they did and just playing a little bit and having fun with what their original passion was. What do you think?
Oh, I would completely agree with that. In fact, I had an experience in my former life working for a firm that did just that. Worked in the financial services industry, and when volumes got high, market was going crazy, the call out was to get management on the phones and start talking to clients. And just for that very reason, one, to help out with, you know, excess volume, but also just to get on the phone and get that experience, get back in the trenches, if you will, and talk to clients directly and help service them. So great example of getting back to the roots, if you will.
Yeah, so the moral of the story for this repartee is don't be afraid to get down on the floor and play with some blocks, right?
I love it.
And, you know, I'm really excited about today's guest. I'm going to tell you a little bit about John Martink, and then Mike will fill you in more officially. But I've known John, I think we're going on 10 years. John and I hang out in the same circle of consultants. We both have been mentored by Alan Weiss, who's kind of the guru of all consultants. And so John and I met years ago. I think it was in Las Vegas at a consulting conference, and found out we live pretty close to each other. And John and I have been friends and colleagues ever since. And so I'm excited to have him here as our guest. Mike, why don't you tell everybody a little bit more formally about what John's background is?
I would be happy to. John Martinka is known as the escape artist because of the work he does in three areas. They're helping executives escape the corporate world by buying the right business the right way, creating large exits for small businesses so that the owner can exit with style, grace, and more money, and accelerating businesses so they escape their plateau with a specialty of using growth by acquisition. John has over 20 years of business experience supported by a master's degree in finance and economics from Marquette University. He's a recognized public speaker and has developed a reputation for expertise in business acquisition and problem solving. He has the knowledge and the real-life experience which gains client confidence and delivers measurable results. John has owned three businesses, led a company turnaround, analyzed hundreds of acquisition candidates for scores of clients, and helped over 100 clients buy or sell a business. He was co-founder of Partner On-Call Network and works with numerous nonprofits and twice as a Rotary Club president. In 2005, he started a Rotary project in conjunction with the Bellevue School District to install computer labs in schools. Over 3,000 computers have been donated and installed in Slovakia, Turkey, and since 2008 in Antigua and Barbuda. John is the author of three books, and to mention one of them, to check out If They Can Sell Pet Rocks, Why Can't You Sell Your Business for What You Want?, which gives readers an innovative action plan that guides one through the turbulent world of business selling. John is an approved provider for Washington State SEAP program, the Street Smart Way to Buy a Business. He is also involved in community service and has memberships with numerous organizations. Just to highlight a few of John's involvements, he's a member of Society of Advancement of Consulting and is part of the Bellevue Breakfast Rotary Club, a part of Rotary International. John, we welcome you to Seattle Shrimp Tank today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So to get us started, John, we talked a little bit as we were just before coming on air this morning or this afternoon, and you had mentioned that you had a brief stint as an employee in the employee space, but quickly realized maybe that was not for you and moved more into the entrepreneurial space, consulting world. Tell us a little bit about that. What made you make that jump and realize that you could have a career in the entrepreneurial space?
Well, when I was in college, a friend of mine and I started a company that did house painting, interior painting, a few other related things because we were both pretty handy and we didn't want to work summer jobs for anyone anymore. My first real job out of college was in the entertainment industry. I worked for a concert promoter, rock, country, some plays, ice shows, things like that. Got to the point where it just wasn't big enough for the owner and me. And one thing led to another, did a couple other things and ended up with a big company for a while and maybe a year and just didn't like it. And I can identify with my clients now who want to leave the corporate world, get their own business. They just get fed up with the bureaucracy and everything else that goes along with that.
Well, you know, John, the United States was built on people building businesses. You help people buy businesses. What's the biggest mistake that somebody going out there thinking, well, I can just go buy a business like I buy a house, so to speak? What's the biggest mistake people are making with in wanting to buy a business?
They don't realize how inefficient the market it is for small, mid-size, even lower middle market companies. Depending on what statistics you see, anywhere from 20 to 50% of companies are ever advertised or listed for sale. The other 50 to 80% are sold directly from seller to buyer, and you have to go out and find them. There's no multiple listing service for small businesses.
So unlike obviously going out in a hot Seattle market like we have here for homes, let me ask this question then. How is this market right now for businesses? Are businesses easy to find? Tell me a little bit about the market right now in Seattle.
Good businesses are never easy to find. There's a reason for it. One word, confidentiality. Owners are scared to death that there's going to be a breach of confidentiality and that their customers, their employees, even their vendors are going to find out and leave, change things. The market is strong. If you go back 10 years, the Wall Street Journal and other publications were proclaiming in the next decade, something like 2/3 of small, mid-sized businesses were going to change hands. Fast forward to 2011, 2015, the same statistics were out there thanks to a little thing called the Great Recession, which one major bank study said 60% of owners delayed their exit by at least 2 years. We are now starting to see that bubble coming to be. Last year, in very, very small businesses, smaller than I work with, the website, bizbuysell.com, said that sales were up about 25% of businesses listed on their website. The middle market statistics, for the fourth year in a row, there was about $3 trillion of transactions last year.
So going back to what you said earlier, though, the market is a difficult place to crack. What would be your advice to a business owner who's thinking about now, I'd like to sell next year, 2 years? How do I get started?
Well, first three things are determine what do you want to do after you sell? What's your next great adventure in life? Talk to your financial advisor and make sure you got enough money for that great adventure. And if it's retirement, does your spouse want you around 24/7? Now, practically with the business, I've always preached there are three things that an owner should do. I've upped it to four about 2 years ago. But the three things are, in no particular order, have solid financial systems, good financial statements, so banks and buyers don't have to play a game to figure out what you're really earning. Make sure the tax returns and the financial statements at least look like they're from the same company. Show you can grow. Don't just say there's potential and I didn't want to grow. I'm comfortable where we are. Show you can grow. What did you do? What were the results? And then a really important one, and it relates to what you guys were talking about earlier when founders get into it because they love the product or service. The owner's often a dependency. Get the owner away from being a dependency. They shouldn't be the only one with product knowledge, key customer contacts, how to program the machine, make the bids, those kind of things. And then the one I've added is, in this economy, show you can attract and retain great employees.
So I want to piggyback on the third that you just gave, because you took the words right out of my next question. I've had a conversation with somebody recently about that, is that it's really difficult to sell a business where the owner is the primary person doing the sales, doing the marketing, being the face, because if that owner sells, all of that goes away. Can you give a couple examples of a way that an owner can say, okay, that's me. How do I start the process of transitioning out?
Well, what you're talking about, before I give a couple tips, is what we would refer to as having personal goodwill versus company goodwill. And all buyers want company goodwill. They don't want that dependency. So what does an owner need to do? First of all, get over it that you have to be the one in control of everything absolutely all the time. So delegate. Create a culture that it's okay to delegate, accept delegation, nurture people. Don't just say, do this, and if they do it wrong, yell at them and say, I can do it better. Take the time to get other people to do things.
I'm going to build on that as well, but go back to the beginning of your 4 points, because it strikes close to home given my day job, and it's something that we see quite regularly, and that is individuals who are at this stage in life and are thinking about making a change like this. And it's fascinating to hear you say the first thing that you think that they should do is understand what they want to do next, and can they afford to make this step. If you can build on that for me, why is that so important to this, and would you call it the first step in this process?
Because you don't want a business owner and a buyer, anyone that represents them, everyone working with them, does not want to get close to the finish line of selling the company and then realizing, oops, I'm getting $5 million. My advisor says I need $8 million, or I'm getting $2 million and I need $4 million, and whatever the numbers you put in there. Or what am I going to do?
And in that situation, I know we have seen it personally in our line of business, but how do you deal with a situation where the individual business owner has a number in their mind, and when the valuation comes back, the number isn't what they were expecting?
That's an interesting question, because it happens all the time.
I was going to say that probably never happens, right?
Oh, no, yeah. Every owner thinks their business is special. I've had business owners say, well, you can't apply the general valuation concepts to my company because we're different. No, you're not. These things sell for in certain ranges based on size, industry, and the ranges are affected by things like customers. Is there a diversity or concentration? Are they good customers priced differently? How loyal are they? Employees, management team, even the lease. Is there a supplier concentration that could affect things? Is there a strong competitor growing nationally? Those things affect what it's worth within that set range of value or multiple of earnings, just like a price earnings ratio on a publicly traded company.
Well, you know, John, we're going to, and John and Mike, we're going to take a short break right now to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, John Martinka, for our hot or not section of the show, we're going to find out what he thinks about the concept of exit, stage left. Don't walk away. We will be right back with more of the Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is brought to you by IdealLife360.com. What would it be like to be in the best shape of your life, both physically and mentally, every day for the rest of your life? Have awesome relationships with people you care about most, never having to worry about money again. What would it be like if you received a letter out of the blue and suddenly discovered you had 20 more years to live, longer than you have ever imagined? What would you do with those extra years of your life? How many lives would you touch? What kind of legacy would you leave behind? What changes would you make today, knowing you had 20 more years in your future? What new, big challenges would you take on? What would be next? Text the word IDEAL to 89800 and discover how to rethink, redefine, and reinvent the best years of your life.
Welcome back to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, where we interview the best and brightest CEOs in the greater Puget Sound area. I'm Mike Pickles, and I'm here with my esteemed co-host, Dan Whedon. Remember, you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes as well. For our next segment, Hot or Not, Dan introduced this as exiting stage left before we went to the break.
So here's how it works, John. Hot or Not section is Mike and I are going to pepper you with different questions about concepts and topics, and you're going to let us know if you think that concept or topic is hot or if it's not, and then explain it. So I talked about exit stage left. So my first hot or not question is, hot or not, planning your exit strategy from the day you purchase a business.
Should be habanero hot.
Habanero hot.
But it isn't, because everyone in my industry will tell you 10 to 20% of owners plan for when they're going to get out. And that doesn't mean from year one. It means all the way through. They just they get caught up in the day-to-day.
Right. So what is one suggestion you might make to that brand new business owner? They just bought a business. They're all excited. What is it that you could get that would impress upon them, hey, start thinking about the end now?
Well, when Mike mentioned my book, They Can Sell Pet Rocks, Why Can't You Sell Your Business for What You Want? I make a big point of what we talked about before, get yourself out of the day-to-day. Once you have the operations and the marketing and the sales down, make sure you're not part of it at the hands-on basis.
Before the break, we were talking too about business owners and the valuation of their business and what number they have in their mind and what they actually might be able to get in the open market. And from a hot or not perspective, one of the things that we also see in our line of business as individuals come across this decision is the idea that I have somebody internally in mind, and that can be a key employee or potentially even a family member that is my first go-to person when I think about selling my business. So the hot or not question is selling internally or perhaps selling to a family member, hot or not?
Well, that's more of your table black pepper. It has to be the absolute right person. Yes, it can happen. It can happen well. Are they willing to go to the bank and sign the same paperwork anyone else would do? The bank's not going to give them any breaks. The seller shouldn't give them too many breaks, especially employees, management team. And I've seen many cases where I've been involved with a deal where it was offered to the employees first. Multiple employees, and then they find out the bank wants them to sign a personal guarantee or put their house up as collateral in addition to the business assets, and just, no, I think I'll be an employee. Mm-hmm.
John, hot or not, purchasing a franchise?
It's, again, it's, we will just say cayenne hot. It's a popular thing. The business in a box of a franchise, I think, is great for people who maybe don't have the business skills to take over an ongoing multi-million dollar operation, because they get a lot of help, hand-holding, and hugs.
So just a quick follow-up to that. my guess then it would also be if you have somebody coming out that does, maybe they don't have necessarily a passion for that franchise, what it does, they may like it, but it looks like it is a going business. It's something that is hot in the marketplace. Do they have to actually have a passion for pizzas if it's a pizza chain, or do they have to have look at it more from a 35,000 foot level of this is a good investment?
Let's say it's hot. It's a hot business. It's a hot concept. Everyone's talking about it. Probably you want to turn away from it.
Oh,
because it's going to be trendy. Think of things like curves. They did a big spike and a huge dip. You want something that's sustainable. Now, your question about pizza, do you have to be a pizza fan to own pizza restaurants? No, you don't. I have a lot of clients, buyers, sellers who really don't know how to make the product, write the code, provide the service, but they see a business where they can add value. And as long as it's something that they could see themselves going into the company every day and it doesn't violate their personal values, they can do well.
So far we've looked at this a little bit more from the seller's perspective. I want to spend a moment a little bit on the buyer side of the equation, and again, on the hot or not side of things. Thinking about it from a buyer's perspective, if I'm a business owner and I look at my firm and I like where we're at, but I want to get bigger, I want to grow a bigger company, hot or not on the sense of buying a firm and growth by acquisition. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think it should be pretty hot because I just came out with a book called Company Growth by Acquisition Makes Dollars and Cents, S-E-N-S-E, where I list 19 different reasons why you should consider growth by acquisition, buying another company.
So people should pick up that book.
They definitely should.
Okay, good.
actually buy it on Amazon. And yeah, these days, in fact, at lunch today, a group meeting guy next to me was saying, I'll bet you're busy. I'll bet there's people going out there looking for companies in this employment market to find good employees where they can't hire them.
And so that sounds like one key reason to potentially consider doing growth by acquisition. Other reasons why a buyer might want to consider going that path?
Well, some of the easy ones are geographic expansion. One of my good clients, Rick Locke, he owns a company called Windows, Doors, and More, bought a similar high-end window door company in Montana. He now has a footprint here in Seattle, Puget Sound area, as well as Idaho, Montana, and now Wyoming. So he got new product lines, geographic expansion, employees are a big one. The few of the top ones I think are get more customers. Customers, especially if it's a slightly different company, you can sell your products to them, their products to yours, etc. Showing you can. Yes, you can. So when it comes time for you to exit and a bigger company comes along, you can say, we've made acquisitions, we've integrated cultures and people, we know how to do it, we'll help you with that end of it. And then a great reason is the bigger the company, the more it sells for, all other things being equal. A $5 million company will sell for a lower multiple of earnings than a $15 million company, than a $50 million company, and anywhere in between or above. There's just less perceived and absolute risk when you have deeper systems, more management, bigger customer base.
So from a sales perspective, scale is a good thing, or can be a good thing.
It is a good thing.
The counter side of that discussion, though, is there's got to be some perils that you could get into, some risks associated with growth by acquisition. What are some things you can counsel individuals thinking about a move like that?
Be careful if the seller wants to stay on, because they're going to still want to be in control, in charge, even if it's in a different location. It can be a tricky one. Be careful of the culture. I had a machine shop owner pass on buying a much smaller machine shop. He wanted capacity. He came to realize it was a lifestyle business. Punch in at 7:30, punch out at 4. If it doesn't go out the door, we'll get to it tomorrow. And his philosophy was, if we say we'll ship Wednesday, we work overtime Tuesday if we have to. And he knew he'd lose the employees.
So Mike asked a hot or not just recently about selling to family members. How about this one? Hot or not? parents purchasing a business for their child.
Is that like participation trophies?
Something like that. Yeah, you worked hard. Let me buy a business for you. But I mean, just thinking, because I've seen situations where parents, either for one reason or another, either the, you know, however it works out, they are willing to be, in a sense, the big paper daddy to help purchase a business for their child. What do you think about that?
I think it can be. If it's done right, it can be good. The parent has to understand whether or not the child has the skills to run the business, has the interest to be an owner and sit where at the table where the decisions are made, and that they're just not doing it to live through their kids, and they're actually going to want to run the business and look over their kid's shoulder because it's their money.
So, you know, today with technology especially, the ability to start one's business, even from their basement, and I always like to say that because my office is in my basement, you know, to work from home and to be able to do things through technology is greater now than at any time. Just from an entrepreneurial standpoint, not necessarily buying or selling a business, but just from an entrepreneurial standpoint, what would you recommend to somebody who says, I want to start something. I don't want to be a multi million dollar business, but I want to create a lifestyle. You mentioned lifestyle a second ago. I want to create a lifestyle where I'm in control of my own destiny and I'm doing something that I love. Talk about the whole becoming an entrepreneur in today, in the 21st century.
Well, I think it's easier than ever.
Right.
Whether it's people doing advisory work like we do or doing any kind of sales, manufacturers, reps who want to be small and have their own product line and control what they do. Yeah, technology aids a lot. You know, the computers, the phones. You can buy a great, you know, all-in-one color printer for $500 these right. days and put out darn nice materials.
So if you want to do something like that, you can't delegate. You are the business. Perils of being the only person or a small, maybe two or three, perils of not being able to delegate. What are some of the things that you could get caught into doing that you'd say, I don't really like running a business?
Well, it's the administrivia.
Okay.
You know, it's the filing. It can be the bookkeeping. It can be, you know, it's organizing contacts and business cards. If you're, you know, salespeople are notorious for not wanting to do that detailed work anyway. And if you want to be out with customers and you got to do that, it can be a speed bump. So you have to think, where can I hire people? Even if you don't want employees, you
right.
can get virtual assistants, part-time contract people.
You can create a team. Because I think about our work, you know, and I work basically my wife and I, but I have a team of people around me, everybody from the CPA to the attorney to the web person to people who are doing things that I can't do, have no interest in doing. You can delegate out to other experts.
That's
right.
You
should. Okay.
And not just experts, but it would just call assistants that are doing for things that are well below your pay grade.
Yeah. Well, and to build on that, the concept of using an expert, right, to bring in an expert to assist in a business, and in your case, to assist somebody thinking about selling their business, I would imagine it must be difficult sometimes working with folks who are truly entrepreneurs, truly what we call do-it-yourselfers, right, but then switching into this mode of I want to sell my business, and I'm going to give you a softball here, but hot or not, using somebody to assist you, a consultant in that process, hot or not on that topic?
I think it's, as you get larger businesses, there's a lot more willingness, and the confidentiality thing disappears a little bit. An advisor, an intermediary being the general term, can add a lot of value, can take the emotion out of it. Buyer and seller sometimes can get a little emotional, and if they say the wrong thing, whereas if there's intermediaries, they can talk behind the scenes and say, here's what my client is venting about. How do we solve this?
Save them from themselves sometimes.
That's right.
Well, we are going to take another short break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, John Martinka, for our Plead the Fifth section of the show, we're going to turn him into Marty McFly. We're taking John back to the future. Don't walk away. We'll be right back with more of the Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is brought to you by Toro Consulting. Dan Whedon is an expert in helping business owners protect their assets and reduce financial risk. profitable growth starts with having a game plan when it comes to assuring that no calamity is fatal. Business continuation and succession planning is critical to your success. Call or text Dan at 360-271-1592 to schedule a no-obligation phone call with Dan to discuss how he can help you safeguard the value of your company.
Welcome back to the Shrimp Take, where we interview the best and brightest CEOs in the greater Puget Sound area. I am Mike Pickles, along with my revered co-host, Dan Whedon.
I like that way better. I'm telling Brad that you've just got a gold star for me.
I tell you what, I knew exactly how to push your buttons there. You can always catch a replay of our podcast at seattle.shrimptake.podcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes as well. For our next segment, it is Plead the Fifth.
One of our maybe our favorite section. Mike and I are going to keep peppering you with questions. These are going to be tougher. You have to answer them. It's kind of like truth or dare. You get one fair catch. You get one plead the fifth if you choose to take it. And I just mentioned the whole little Marty McFly Back to the Future. John, it's 1985 all over again. You go back in the DeLorean and you go back in time. What would you start over? What if you could start your career over, what would you do differently?
What would I do differently? I think one of the lessons I learned early in the advisory business, which is a little later than 1985, was you have to be yourself. And I got into what I'm doing through serendipity. A friend of mine in my Rotary Club at the time made a comment to me along the lines of, I've always thought you'd be good in my business, and one thing led to another. And I tried to emulate his style, and I learned you have to be yourself.
I'm just going to tell you, that's really great advice. I think that it's easy to get caught up trying to emulate somebody, but being yourself is not only more genuine, but people will gravitate towards that.
John, in your day-to-day, obviously, you do a lot of work with business owners, and we've talked a lot about buyers and sellers. For our plea, the fifth segment, what would you say would be the most important step in purchasing a business? And there's multiple different steps, right? Preparation, location, screening, analysis, valuation, deal structure, regulations, due diligence, etc. Financing. What would be the most important of those items?
The most important would be, and we're assuming this is a motivated buyer, would be realize you have to build a relationship with the seller. In the small, mid-size, lower middle market arena, nobody buys from or sells to somebody they don't like. It is not a spreadsheet-driven game like it is with the middle market, the corporate acquisitions, things like that.
You had hit on that a little bit earlier in our conversation as well. I would imagine that is in alignment with also the idea of culture, right? If you know the individual you're buying from, that probably leads to a better understanding of the culture that they've created at an organization. Can you expand on that a little bit and how important is that in the decision-making process?
Well, it has to be very important. Dan started out with the word to you about baby, and a lot of owners look at the business as their baby. Their kids are grown. It's what they have. And you have to be very cognizant of the fact that it is an important thing in their life, and they're looking for someone to maintain that culture. I hear all the time, I want someone who will take care of my employees. I want someone who will take care of my customers. In fact, I had one lady once in her line was, I do not want that competitor taking care of my customers.
I think that's a great comparison, right? I think about it, the baby, the adolescence, right? And then you take them through the dreaded teenage years, right? And you've got them through that rough patch. I love that comparison.
All right, John, I'm going to make you pick one here in hot or plead the fifth. What's more important, college smarts or street smarts?
For most people, I would say it's a combination. I mean, I'm not letting you sit on the, you got to pick one. Then I'll say for anyone who wants to scale a business and really get it to be something, I would say it's college smarts.
Okay.
They're going to, if you learned process, if you learned how to think through problems, yes, there are a lot of people who the street smarts cover it and they're great. But for most of us, college doesn't teach us how to design a bridge like it does with an engineer. It teaches you how to solve problems, ask questions, investigate things. And that's how you grow a business, is figuring out what your customers' problems are and solving them.
So from a street smarts perspective, there's a certain resilience in a lot of cases. Talk about where somebody who may not have a high degree of education post-high school, but could make a really good entrepreneur. Talk about where some of the value of having some hard knocks and street smarts behind you, where does that become valuable?
Well, it does, very similar to what we talked about with someone who, you know, came out of college. It's that they've learned it in the trenches. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a manufacturing business or, you know, a service business, a repair business, it doesn't matter. They've learned how to read their customers. They've learned how, through experience, to take care of their employees and build processes in. Well, sometimes, probably often, it might take them a little longer than someone who has built up those skills through education and corporate experience. And that's where, you know, most people come out of the corporate world and want to buy a business. They just don't have an idea for a new one. So they say, I want to use my management mm-hmm. and leadership skills. I know process, I know sales, and I want to take something and improve upon it.
So John, we discussed a little bit earlier your 4 points of somebody who's thinking about selling their business and that are critically important. And just to quickly run through that list again, you talked about having financial statements that were in fantastic order, being able to demonstrate that you can grow your business and why, not having an owner that the business is absolutely dependent upon, and showing that you can attract and retain good employees. Those are four sort of cornerstones of a business ready to be acquired or sold. From a plead the fifth perspective, if I come to you or you get a business owner that comes to you that does not meet any of those criteria, are you taking that opportunity and you're going to run with it or not?
Well, I like the way you work cornerstone into that, those four things. That was pretty clever.
Not my first rodeo.
It depends. It depends on if they're making money. If they're in an industry where, say, you know, they should be making 15% net profit and they're making 5, well, that's a tough one. If they're still doing pretty well, they're not going to sell for as much as businesses that have those attributes, and they're going to have to realize that buyers are going to be picking it apart because of those things. So then it comes down to motivation. How motivated are they to sell? Did they have a heart attack recently and the doctor's saying get rid of the business? Or is it just, yeah, I want to do something else. I want to retire. And if they say if they've worked with someone like you and they determine they need a certain amount of money, and is it still going to get them there? They may be happy.
All right, John, I know your lovely wife, Jan, and this is what compels me to ask you this, hot or not. Hot or not, your celebrity crush.
My wife.
No. Jan is off the table. So your celebrity crush, somebody on TV, movies, sports, who's your celebrity crush?
My celebrity crush.
You can plead the fifth.
I can?
You have one left, but that'd be dirty pool on your end. Come on.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to think, there's so many of them.
Is she listening today? Maybe that.
I don't know if she's listening or not. You know, I will tell you what, when I was a kid growing up, was the one? Oh, I'm drawing a blank. Cheryl Teagues. On the swimsuit cover,
right.
Sports Illustrated all the time.
You know what,
Cheryl Teagues. I think that was before I met my wife.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to let you off the hook with that one. And just in the nick of time, because we have to wrap up, unfortunately. This goes so fast. John, we want to thank you so much for coming on the program today. For our listeners that want to get in touch with you, learn about buying or selling a business, I know you focus on buying. If they want to learn more about you or your company, how can they get more information?
My phone number is 425-576-1814. My website's martinkaconsulting.com, MARTINKA consulting.com. And my email's john@johnmartinka.com.
And before you wrap up, Mike, I do want to say this. It's been a pleasure sitting side by side here. I've had fun.
I think this is one of the best shows we've ever done.
Might be the best.
I think it could be.
Yeah, so we'll let Brad know about that. But hey, had fun. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. Our next show which may include me or not. We'll leave that up in the air for right now. Will be Wednesday, June 13th, where our guest will be Kelly Kincaid with Jetlagged Comic. Make sure you check out all of our replays on seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. And remember, to become a shark, we all start out as shrimps.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.